Hi, I'm Ray.
And I'm Charlotte.
And this is the Midnight Record.
The Midnight Record.
Yeah.
Zoom edition.
Yeah. We're switching it up. So if we sound a little weird today, you know why.
Yeah, we schedules just didn't work out where we were able to be in person today, unfortunately. So this week's episode and next week's episode, because we're recording two at a time, we'll be over Zoom. So yeah, we sound a little different, but then hopefully after those two episodes, you will be back in person and be rocking and rolling that way for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. So continuing with our Pride Month discussions, I suppose, Ray and I really wanted to talk about what is currently going on in the U.S. with the anti-transgender and anti-LGBTQ plus bills that are currently being passed. It seems sort of like left and right. And we're going to go over a little bit of the history and sort of what got us to this point, give you some information about what is currently going on potentially in your own home state. And it's going to get a little political today for sure. So Ray, do you want to kick us off with some of the history of these types of transgender rights?
Absolutely. So we're actually going to start all the way back in 1868 with the ratification of the 14th Amendment. So in this year, the 14th Amendment was ratified and it included the Equal Protection and Due Process clauses in Section 1, which would include transgender persons as well as other identifiable groups. So it was as stated, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person's life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So I guess that was the first most inclusive type amendment that was made.
Well, the 14th Amendment, isn't the 14th Amendment how slavery ended?
Is it?
I think so. I think that's the one that also has Roe v. Wade in it.
Interesting. Another topic of interest right there.
Mm-hmm.
So moving a little further, in 1923 is actually the first year that the term, which this isn't the term that's used now, but the term transsexual was first used. Now we refer as trans or transgender, but this is the first time that they were kind of like named as a group, I guess. It was in a published journal article. So I think it was the first time that people who were trans were kind of being recognized by the medical community. So in 1949, we had the onset of hormone therapy. This was San Francisco physician Harry Benjamin pioneered the use of hormone therapy in the treatment of trans patients. Benjamin was interested in the fields of anti-aging and sexual identity, believing that it was possible for individuals to feel as if they had been assigned the wrong sex at birth. He advised one such patient to have sex reassignment surgery in Europe. Doubtful that psychotherapy could help patients who felt this way, he advocated for hormone therapy and surgery to help trans people live as their true gender. So we love Harry Benjamin.
Live, laugh, love.
Harry Benjamin really gave a lot of people a much better life starting in 1949.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually didn't know about him. So I'm learning as we go too, just as you guys are.
I feel like, do you remember that movie, The Danish Girl?
Yes, but I hadn't seen it.
Okay. So I believe that Lily Elbe, I'm butchering that. I'm so sorry. She in 1939 went to Germany for sex. Oh, 1930, not 1939, for sex reassignment surgery. But I think her surgery wasn't, her surgery is not considered like part of today's like modern trans surgery.
Right.
Sure. But that's just, I mean, that's just like 9 years before what you're talking about, which is why mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Anyway, she's fascinating. So
yeah, I would
definitely suggest checking her out. But anyway, continue. Sorry.
No, you're fine. So,
nice.
So in 1959, we had Christine Jorgensen denied a marriage license. So Christine Jorgensen is a trans woman, and they were denied a New York marriage license based on the sex she was assigned at birth. Her fiance, Howard Knox, was fired from his job when rumors of their attempt to marry became public. Jorgensen used the publicity her case generated to become a spokeswoman and activist for the trans community. Mm. So, I mean, when was it that, what year was it that gay people were allowed to marry, like LGBT people in general were allowed to marry in New York? I feel like it.
Oh, in the, in 2015, it was when it was passed by the Supreme Court.
That's absolutely insane to me.
Governor Cuomo signed New York's Marriage Equality Act on June 24th, 2011.
Wow.
I believe that Massachusetts was the first U.S. state that allowed people in same-sex marriages to get married. I could be incorrect. I know Mass was definitely one of the first.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, that's wild, because it's like it wasn't even that long ago. It's just like,
well, no, yeah, definitely not that long ago. Right. I mean, of course people could have, oh, what do you call them,
common law?
Yeah, like common law marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was correct. Massachusetts was the first with May 19th of 2004, which that is wild. And then the next state was California, but then it was repealed on November 5th because of Prop 8 and all that stuff, you know, trying to get that to stop. And then Connecticut on November 12th of 2008. And then within the next few years, 2013 was a really big year for a ton of states to be passing same-sex marriage laws here in the states, and then like I said, in 2015 it was allowed nationwide.
About damn time.
And I moved to New York like the week before that happened. Oh, wow. I was planning on going to Pride like that, and it happened that Friday of Pride weekend. It was insane.
Wow, I'm sure that was crazy.
Oh my gosh, it was so crazy. It was very
good. But in the best way.
Yeah, no, it was very good.
After this, we have the Stonewall riots, which we've talked about before on this podcast. And as a lot of you guys probably know, it was kind of spearheaded by trans women of color. So we had people like Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, all working towards the gay rights movement and just really stirring up shit in New York City, trying to get the LGBT people human rights.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. They should. As they should.
100%.
So in 1976, we have MT versus JT. The Superior Court of New Jersey rules that trans persons may marry on the basis of their gender identity, regardless of their assigned sex at birth. This landmark case found that the plaintiff, MT, was entitled to receive spousal support after her husband, JT, left her and stopped supporting her financially. The court decided that JT's marriage was valid and that she deserved support in part because she'd had sex reassignment surgery. So interesting that although we didn't see same-sex marriage until much later, that we did see in 1976 this happening.
Well, because I mean, it's still under the guise of like heteronormity, right? Normativity, right? So she, you know, she is a woman. She's married to a man. So that means that she's straight, which means that I suppose she has more rights than people who want to get, who are in same sex relationships. Even though everyone should have the same rights, you know, but I agree. I think it's honestly, it's like very progressive for the 70s. Mm-hmm.
For the 70s, absolutely.
Yeah, it seems, it almost seems like we've regressed significantly.
That's what I've been feeling like. Like some of the things that I've seen in the news lately, like I think that's a big reason that we're also doing this episode is it's like, are we living in a twilight zone? Like what is going on?
Right. I mean, it's pretty horrific. It almost feels like very dystopian or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving swiftly along, in 1989, we have Anne Hopkins, who fought back to her employer. Anne Hopkins was denied a promotion on the basis that she was not, in the opinion of management, sufficiently feminine. She sued, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that gender stereotyping can form the basis of a title six sex discrimination complaint. In the words of Justice Brennan, a plaintiff need only demonstrate that an employer who has allowed a discriminatory motive to play a part in an employment decision must prove by clear and convincing evidence that it would have made the same decision in the absence of discrimination, and that petitioner had not carried this burden. So interesting to see that, because we still see a lot of issues in the workplace today. I mean, as far as like the wage gap and things like that, and men getting promotions over women and all of that stuff. So it's been happening for a very long time.
Right. I mean, and you know, trans people still have a hard time in professional settings, you know, like just with, you know, people's prejudices and things like that as well, that also add fuel to that fire too.
Absolutely. So this next one actually goes back to the case I did at the end of May. So, or no, wait, the case I did mid-May. So the case of Brandon Tina.
Oh yeah, that was like, yeah,
technically last week when we're recording, but by the time this comes out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, so you're right.
So this is the Minnesota Human Rights Act of 1993. So Minnesota actually became the first state to ban employment discrimination on the basis of perceived gender identity with the passage of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So, and in the same year, Brandon Tina was murdered, as we talked about, and was inspired the film Boys Don't Cry. And this prompted a national movement to incorporate anti-transgender hate crimes into future hate crime legislation. So, and we talked about this a bit in the previous episode, but Brandon's tragedy really did push a national conversation that was very much needed.
Right. And even though we, like we said in the episode, we wish that he hadn't had to have died for that conversation to happen, there is, you know, there's somewhat of a silver lining with all that.
Yes. Yes. So in 1999, we have Littleton versus Prange. The Texas Fourth Court of Appeals rejects the logic of New Jersey's MT versus JT, which we just talked about, that happened in 1976, and refuses to issue marriage license to opposite-sex couples in which one partner is trans. A medical malpractice lawsuit led to this case in which the plaintiff, Christy Lee Littleton, sued her husband's doctor over his death. The courts, however, ruled that since Littleton was assigned male at birth, her marriage was invalid and she couldn't file suit as her husband's widow. So, like, we were surprised at 1976 having this ruling. We're still seeing in the late 90s that it's not as cut and dry as it seems.
Right, exactly.
Texas was like, no, not okay. Get it together, Texas. Well, Charlotte, tell them.
yeah, what she said. I mean, yeah, look, Texas is becoming, it's not about red or blue, it's about accepting of humans. People and, you know, practice what you preach and all that stuff. And, you know, it's not about which political party you're, like I said, it's not about which political party you subscribe to or whatever that should be shaping your views. You should be shaping your views and you should be educating yourself.
Yeah.
And I think if more people think that if more people just educated themselves on these issues, they would be able to have a clearer picture instead of being swayed in one shape or form by their political party or by whatever news outlet they watch or, you know, whatever. That's why, like, I've always said, whenever it comes to laws or things, you know, political things that are going on in the US, I try to look at articles or watch stations from like all spectrums of the political umbrella that we have here. So I can get like, so I can form one, my own opinion, and two, I can see a much clearer picture of what's actually going on. But yeah, I mean, Texas, get it the fuck together.
I know. I mean, all of the US really, but
I mean, please do not vote for Greg Abbott again, just for the love of God. Just please, just get that man out of office. He's please. So awful. He yeah. does not care about anybody other than himself.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So moving to 2001, we have, I'm not exactly sure how to say this name. It's Janoel. It's like J apostrophe and then Noel. Janoel.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Noel Gardner's inheritance. So the Kansas Supreme Court refuses to allow trans woman Janelle Gardner to inherit her husband's property. The court ruled that because Gardner wasn't assigned female at birth, her subsequent marriage to a man was invalid. Again, we're seeing this invalidation of a marriage that was technically legally allowed. And it's just like, it's ridiculous because Why does it matter? Like,
right. What other people do in their own personal lives. Why does it, if they're not hurting anybody, I just don't understand why people feel the need to know what's going on in other people's personal lives. And that includes what's in between their legs.
Right.
It's none of your business.
Right.
You need to know.
And I'm pretty sure if her husband had been alive, even when he's not alive, he would have wanted his property and things to go to, like, I'm sure he had a will that literally said he wanted his things to go to Noel. So.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just ridiculous. In 2007, we have the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Gender identity protections are controversially stripped from the 2007 version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, but the updates to the legislation ultimately fail. Future versions of ENDA beginning in 2009 include gender identity protections. So it looks like there was a little back and forth with it, but in 2009, we found most gender identities to be protected by this act.
Well, that's good that it went back and then it went forward again, you know?
Yeah. So the last one that I have along the timeline is in 2009, and this is the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act. The Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, signed by President Barack Obama, allows for federal investigation of bias-motivated crimes based on gender identity in cases where local law enforcement is unwilling to act. Later that same year, Obama issued an executive order banning the executive branch from discriminating on the basis of gender identity in employment decisions.
Because I remember this happening because mm-hmm. I didn't know who James Byrd was at the time. I, of course, knew Matthew Shepard's name
more.
And, you know, it doesn't just cover gender or sexual orientation either. It covers race bias and it covers religion bias. Like, it covers a lot more. But of course, because, you know, Matthew Shepard's name is on the bill or the... Mm-hmm. Yeah, is on the bill, that people automatically like, it's a gay law. And it's like, well, a lot of laws actually protect gay people.
Right.
Fun fact.
How dare laws protect gay people?
I know. Can you believe? But yeah, and then I read more into it and I was like, oh, interesting. But I actually didn't like really find out about it until, I don't know, I think later on in college, maybe. Right. But yeah, no, it covers a lot of things, but yeah, it's glad that that was passed for sure.
Yeah. All right. So that's a lot of what I have as far as history goes. Charlotte, if you want to get into a bit of like kind of what's been going on recently.
Sure, I will be more than happy to tell you about the dumpster fire that's currently happening. It is a little bit of a dumpster fire, unfortunately. So, unfortunately, during Donald Trump's administration, starting in 2017 when he went into office, there has been a very clear narrative that he and his cabinet and people of a certain political party were trying to attack transgender people and the LGBTQ plus community as a whole, but specifically transgender people, and take away their rights. One of the, in my personal opinion, one of the worst that was passed, but then luckily was reversed by current President Joe Biden. In May of 2021, it was one of the first and only things that Biden has done. But it's fine. That's a whole other thing. It was actually one of the first things that Biden passed when he got into office. But disproportionately, transgender youth are homeless. Many of them are kicked out of their homes, don't have a place to go, think, so on and so forth. So this law that Donald Trump ended up passing was to undermine the 2016 Equal Access Rule by allowing sex segregated shelters to discriminate against trans people. The proposal allowed these shelters to make placement determinations based solely on biological sex and not gender identity, ignoring clear case laws for what constitutes gender identity discrimination and the plain meaning of sex, and erroneously claiming that such placements are not discriminatory. It also allowed shelters to make determinations about biological sex if they have a good faith belief that a person seeking access is not of the sex the shelter serves. So essentially if they're not quote unquote passing enough for them. And for those of you who don't know what passing is, it's a term in the transgender community that essentially it means can't do you pass for even though you were not bo born in the same in the right body, do you pass through surgery or clothing or whatever for the sex that you actually are? So some of the examples that the preamble of this ruling stated was like height, facial hair, Adam's apple, other gender stereotypes as factors, such as like breasts, hips, those types of things as well. And I think that is personally, I think that is so egregious because inhumane on top of embarrassing somebody, on top of already not allowing somebody to have access who needs access to shelter because they are homeless, that on top of that, you're going to embarrass them by saying, you are a woman, but you don't pass as a woman, so you don't get to come into this women's shelter because I know that you're transgender because you don't quote unquote pass enough for me to my liking, whatever that means, right? And it's so egregious. And again, LGBTQ plus individuals already have limited access to alternative shelter options, and it just was making it 10 times more difficult, essentially, to the point where within the transgender community access, oh, wait, sorry, to the point where 87% of respondents of this study that I am reading on AmericanProgress.org, obviously, all of our links will be in the show notes below. Who identify as transgender, non-binary, sorry, who identify as transgender, non-binary, agender, queer gender, or gender nonconforming, find that finding access to shelter is somewhat difficult at 31%, very difficult at 40%, or near impossible at 16% for them to find an alternate homeless shelter if they were refused from another homeless shelter. Among respondents who specifically identify as non-binary, gender non-conforming, genderqueer, or agender, which I believe are all under the transgender umbrella, 91% said that it would be somewhat difficult. 91% said that it would be somewhat difficult, very difficult, 38%, or impossible, 3%, to find an alternative shelter option. So, and don't even get me started about transgender people of color, because then those stats go, those percentages get even higher. And, you know, another part of this ruling was that shelters could lose funding if they didn't comply with the rule. So he was like, not he, because it's not just about DJT, it's about the whole system. But the people who were trying to get this passed were essentially forcing the hands of perhaps people who ran shelters who, you know, maybe they thought, well, okay, I don't care what the ruling is going to say. If someone comes to me and, you know, they identify as a woman, and then they're going to be let in regardless of what they quote unquote look like. Because women come in all shapes and sizes and forms, and so do men, and so do non-binary people. So they would lose their funding, which could completely destroy that shelter and significantly impact the lives of non-transgender people who are taking refuge in those shelters as well. And I recently watched Maid on Netflix. And for those who haven't watched it, a lot of it takes place in a domestic violence shelter. And it was, I know I'm like 8 months behind. I know everyone watched that like a while ago, but watching the everything that they have to go through government, like this woman that the story is about had to go through government-wise just to be able to feed her child. There's so much red tape already that having to shut down a shelter would be devastating, right? This article is really fascinating, actually, because it talks about just like the whole history of this bill, but I won't go too much more into it other than, you know, in light of the coronavirus pandemic and resulting economic fallout, this proposed rule was especially concerning. As homelessness and domestic violence increased, it is important to consider that transgender people are more likely to be low income and experience housing insecurity. Moreover, coronavirus-related lockdown place victims of domestic violence at a greater risk, and LGBTQ plus populations face higher rates of intimate partner violence. For these reasons, transgender people face an unprecedented crisis of housing insecurity due to COVID-19. Again, luckily it has been repealed, and it was, what's the word I'm looking for? It was reversed, which is amazing, but there's still a long way to go as far as, homelessness within the transgender community. And we'll have some, like I said, we always have resources and things down below, but so if you want to donate, there are some places to donate as well, down there. So that was like probably one of the biggest, but as far as actual rulings that happened in the last few years, on a presidential level. However, unfortunately, there has been a lot of encouragement from individuals to encourage people to like talk about how much they hate LGBTQ plus people, specifically trans people, and people of color. So, you know, you can get a 1-2-3 punch right there, to the point where we are seeing record-breaking, like the amount of transgender, anti-transgender laws that are currently being passed in states is astounding and very horrific. 2021 became the record year for anti-transgender legislation. So the article that I'm reading from the Human Rights Campaign was written on March 13th of 2021. By March 13th, 82 anti-transgender bills had been introduced to state legislative sessions, surpassing the 2020 total of 79. And that's just wild. 79 in a whole year is horrific, but 82 in the course of what, 10 weeks of the first year is just insane. Some of the largest and I guess most well-known anti-trans legislations that happened in 2021 was from South Carolina, which was HB 4047, an anti-transgender medical care ban. Texas, SB 1311, an anti-transgender medical care ban. And Michigan, SB 218, an anti-transgender sports ban. These bills are really not addressing any like real problem necessarily, but they are being driven by, to be quite honest, far right organizations that are attempting to score political points by creating a nation full of hate and fear. And it's incredibly upsetting because so many of these people who are sowing this hate and fear say that they are, you know, America is a Christian nation. They say that they're God-fearing people, but like, doesn't the Bible say like to love your neighbor? Like, yeah. This is like a really sad episode, guys. I'm really sorry. This like really, this bums me out so much. And I know it bums out Ray because like, it's just so, I just don't understand how people can be filled with so much hate for other people. And we've talked about racism, we've talked about homophobia and transphobia and things like that before. And I've said it once and I'll say it again, like you are not born to hate other people. You are taught that. And there is always a way to unlearn it. But it seems like right now that hate is winning and it's really dividing, America. And it's really, really scary because fun fact, about 60% of Trump supporters across each of the 10 swing states in America say that transgender people should be able to live freely and openly. And at least 87% of those people across the 10 swing states say that transgender people should have equal access to medical care, with many states breaking over 90% support. So honestly, it's not about what the constituents want, right? It's about what the legislators and the people that are currently in power and what they want and how they want to sway certain votes. It's astounding. When I read those figures, right, I was like agog, like and aghast. Yeah. Like, I was like, wait, what? Like, I mean, I thought it was like high-ish, but right, like 60% and then 80, like almost 90%. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, that's why it's so important to read, you know, and to educate yourself so much as you possibly can, because it's really not black and white and there are so many layers, but what we are fed is very, in a lot of ways, very black and white. Mm-hmm. So as far as anti-trans laws that are currently up for session, I suppose, the top three states are Arizona with 12 bills, Iowa with 14 bills, and Tennessee with 14 bills. Now, this doesn't mean these bills are passed. These are just bills that are up for, up to be passed, essentially. Weirdly enough, Texas doesn't have any right now, which is wild. So those are the top three, followed by Oklahoma with 10, Missouri with 8. Yeah. And then Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia was 6. And, you know, a lot of them are weirdly enough having to deal with the Women's Sports Act. I find it, well, not women's sports, just one of them is the one in South Carolina is called Save Women's Sports Act. But I find it very interesting that they're only concerned about women's sports and they're not concerned about men's sports.
Right.
So, like, if you're going to have this energy for women, have the same energy for men. Like, let's get that first thing straight. Like, if, like, I'm also like, don't, obviously I don't want them to pass these laws, right? But really, if you're going to have the same energy, like, why are you just so concerned about women and women's sports and everything? We recently talked about Leah and how she actually like went down in her time when she transitioned, but like they don't want her to participate in women's sports because she quote unquote has an advantage, which like clearly she doesn't. Like, it's just so asinine, right? And you know, a lot of it goes into the patriarchy and misogyny and all that stuff too, which, you know, we would be here for like 8 hours to really talk about it. But I think, but Ray, we wanted to finish up with talking about don't say gay bill, which you have a lot about that now as well.
There's a ton of stuff going on. Like, I even had an article about like how like Roe versus Wade or the reversal of Roe versus Wade would directly also impact like the trans community, particularly trans men and non-binary folks who need access to reproductive health care and abortion. And then also like the way it would have significant like consequences on vulnerable groups if privacy related rights like access to contraception or gender affirming care are threatened. So that's a whole other thing going on as well that I wanted to note. That's absolutely ridiculous. But moving to the Don't Say Gay bill, which was kind of pioneered in Florida first, and then we've also seen it now moving on to, as of April 10th, 2022, it had moved on to more than a dozen states that are proposing this Don't Say Gay bill.
I mean, it's like we heard about it and then it sort of became like an avalanche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So technically the name of it isn't Don't Say Gay, but people have kind of coined it as this because basically that's what they're trying to do, is like silence LGBT people. Overall, they seek to prohibit schools from using a curriculum or discussing topics of gender identity or sexual orientation. I've even seen an article that I found that was from 2 days ago. It was a Florida high school student, and they were doing a graduation speech for their high school graduation. And because he chose to a bit about himself being gay, he wasn't allowed to say that. And I actually don't know if he was even allowed to do the speech because he talked about his LGBTQ identity in the speech.
Jeez.
And it's funny because a lot of people were trying to say that this Don't Say Gay bill only affected like very young children, like from kindergarten to third grade or something of that sort. But clearly it's well outside of that. And clearly it's a lot more than a lot of people were just saying. It's inappropriate to talk about these things to very young kids. And there was even accusations of that this behavior was grooming these young kids to change their sexual identity. Just absolutely ridiculous things. Yeah. So basically a lot of this is kind of taking away what could be a safe and supportive environment for queer youth, transgender youth, all of these things, because, A lot of kids don't feel like safe to come out at home. And sometimes like being themselves in school or something like that can be like a safe space, but they don't want to allow this. So Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the, which is called the Parental Rights in Education Bill, barring public schools teachers from holding classroom instruction about sexual orientation or gender identity for students in kindergarten through third grades, or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students in accordance with state standards. He said, we will make sure that parents can send their kids to school to get an education, not an indoctrination. And it was a lot of nationwide controversy. Like you said, it kind of like snowballed from there. And so this even went on to, it was part of a first grade curriculum talking about families being part of the curriculum and how some of her students may have two moms or two dads. It was a teacher in Florida that was talking about it. Basically, she was saying that she would be violating the law by talking about different family structures.
Which is just like so ridiculous because I don't know. I personally don't feel like that's quote unquote indoctrinating children. That's literally teaching children how to be accepting of one another despite their differences. Right.
Exactly.
Like, and also wouldn't you, I hope that like, if I ever had kids, like that they feel comfortable to be their truest selves. I mean, around me, but also around their classmates. Like, I don't want them to be in a hostile environment where they don't feel like they can be themselves, like regardless of who that person is, right? Like it goes so much deeper than LGBTQ+, but like, of course it's under the guise of LGBTQ+ because gay people are, you know, awful or whatever they think that gay people, like, it's just so stupid. Sorry. It's just so stupid.
Yeah. So, but since Florida taking Florida's lead, we've seen Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, Iowa, Louisiana, South Carolina, Missouri, Indiana, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Ohio, all introduce similar bills since that. One of which I see like an Arizona bill that aimed to change the state's sex ed curriculum to focus on biological sex and not gender identities. So like, you're really like alienating these transgender kids in the sex ed curriculum. Like they can't be talked about.
Right.
It's just, it's all crazy and ridiculous. And like we talked about earlier, it feels like we're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But yeah, that's mainly what I have as far as that goes.
Yeah, and again, we have a bunch of resources down below, and also places you can donate if you feel, you know, if you're able and feel so inclined. Mm-hmm. And yeah, our DMs are always open. We are always happy to talk more about these issues, or if you need a place to like vent, we can also help with that.
Absolutely.
So Ray, do you want to tell the good people where they can find us?
Absolutely. You can find us at The Midnight Record on TikTok or Instagram, at TMR Pod on Twitter, and themidnightrecord@gmail.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all of your favorite podcast listening platforms. It really helps us out, lets us know that we're still doing a good job, and we just like interacting with you guys. So we really appreciate it. Also, please don't forget to check out our Patreon. We are slowly but steadily growing over there, I guess. Until next time.
See you at midnight.
I'll see you at midnight.
Not over Zoom.
Oh my God.